Hello, it is Friday, July 8th. I'm Trent Rinesmith, another edition of the Come On Now MMA podcast. Start off talking a little bit about Sean Strickland and how I think he screwed up his opportunity here at UFC 276. So he went into the fight, I think he was ranked 6th. He was fighting an unranked fighter in Alex Pereira, but he fought to his opponent's strengths here, which, while I guess some people will give him points for that, I am not one of those people. I think that was a huge mistake and a huge lost opportunity for Strickland. And I think he's now not at the back of the line. He's definitely not even close to where he was before this fight took place. And one of the biggest reason of that is because of the way he fights. He uses a jab heavy approach. He kind of fights straight up. It is just relentless forward pressure and relentless jabs. He doesn't give his opponents time to think, but he doesn't overwhelm them with power. He overwhelms them with volume and just the constant pushing and constant jab. Had he used his smarts in this fight, he would have fought to Pereira's weakness, which was take him down, hold him down, and we know Strickland can do that. He didn't do that. And I saw Chael Sonnen wants to give Strickland some credit for that. For what? He went out there and essentially dared his opponent to knock him out, and he did just that. He knocked him out. And now Pereira's going to be more likely than not fighting for a title when he wasn't even ranked before this fight. Had Strickland shut him down and used his wrestling and just held him down and overwhelmed him in that manner, Strickland very well may have been fighting Israel Adesanya for the next middleweight championship, but he didn't, and he got knocked out. Now he goes down, and he's going to have a long way to rebuild because he is not an exciting fighter. He can trash talk all he wants, but when he gets in the cage, he's kind of a boring fighter. And I don't mind that, but I'm not the one doing the matchmaking, and I'm not the one trying to put fans in the seats. And a boring fighter, even if they're a trash-talking fighter, is going to struggle to get matched up against a top-ranked opponent. And Sean Strickland, maybe through his hubris, maybe through bad planning, he cost himself dearly in that fight. Sean Brady and Bilal Muhammad has, while not been signed, it looks like it's going to be signed, and this is a fantastic welterweight fight. And this is kind of ties in with Strickland a little bit with Muhammad. He's number 5 ranked. He's 21-3-0-1 overall. He's in an 8-fight unbeaten streak. But you don't hear his name mentioned all that much for a title fight because he's mostly a hold him down, keep him down, heavy top game fighter. And again, I don't mind that, but I'm not the one booking the fights. And so Bilal Muhammad is having a hard time getting an opponent above him in the rankings. A lot of it has to do with just the machinations of who is there and where they stand in the future of the division. And so Muhammad, in order to stay busy, he takes a fight against the number 9 ranked Sean Brady here. And Brady is 15-0 and 5-0 in the UFC, and he looks very much like one of the fighters who's going to be the future of the division, along with Chimaev and Rakhmonov. And I say smart of Bilal Muhammad to fight Sean Brady now as opposed to later, because I don't think you want to fight this guy later. Same way you don't want to fight Rakhmonov or Chimaev later. Well, you probably don't want to fight Chimaev now, especially don't want to fight him later when he improves even more. And I think you're in the same boat here with Sean Brady. Very good fighter, very good on the ground. I don't think this is going to be a stand-up war or a fight that's going to, you know, be a bloodbath. I think it's going to be a tactical battle, and I think it's going to be an entertaining matchup in that respect. But I think this is a fight that Bilal Muhammad took because he can't get a booking against someone ranked above him right now. Better fight Brady now rather than later. And Brady is also one of the well, for lack of a better term, golden boys in the UFC right now. He's on the come up. He's got a name. He's getting a little bit of press. If you beat him, I don't think it moves Muhammad up in the rankings, but it definitely doesn't hurt him. It gives him some bragging rights, and it gives him an opportunity to call out one of the other young fighters that's on the way up. And probably in this case, it's got to be Rakhmonov more than Chimaev, because I think Chimaev is already earmarked for top competition. Not that Muhammad's not top competition, but he's not top competition with a big name. So, very intriguing matchup here. I like it very much, and I will be looking forward to it in a big way. Jim Miller. This one of the big news stories ahead of UFC 276 was that Jim Miller was fighting out his UFC deal. The UFC, and from what it sounded like, not by his choice. He was fighting, originally scheduled to fight Bobby Green, ended up facing Donald Cerrone at welterweight instead of Green at lightweight. Late replacement Cerrone, and they decided, all right, let's just make it welterweight, make it easy on everybody. These two guys are veterans. They're fighting on their names more than any than for a title fight at this point. So made sense. What didn't make sense was that the UFC let Miller go into this fight without a contract. And I think what happened here was that they realized their error, and that their error was that they were going to have Jim Miller fighting Donald Cerrone, and the winner was going to be have the most wins in the history of the UFC. Miller was already fighting in the most fights in the UFC history, and so if Miller wins, he's got the most wins in UFC history. He leaves that fight without a contract. There's a very real scenario where he gets the mic in his face and he says, how about a new deal, UFC? And I think the UFC, who have shown they don't mind bad press or even consider bad press, I think in this case they realize that this is a terrible look, because Jim Miller would be and is now the winningest fighter in UFC history, but you choose to let him fight out his contract, and he has to then, from all appearances here, if it's mentioned in his post-fight post-fight interview in the Octagon, he's pretty much is looking, perception-wise, like he is begging for a new contract from the UFC. And the UFC is then left holding the bag and then left to explain why the man they just praised as the winningest fighter in UFC history is left to more or less beg for a new deal. And so I think that kind of got in their heads a little bit. And so someone had the smarts to say, hey, you know what we should probably do here? We should probably sign Jim Miller to a contract before he fights Donald Cerrone at UFC 276, just in case he gets the win, and just in case he is the winningest fighter in UFC history, and then he doesn't bring up that we're kind of shafting him in his post-fight interview. And so that's exactly what happened. Miller got a four-fight extension after the weigh-ins, the ceremonial weigh-ins, the night before the fight card, and good on him. But again, these contracts are not guaranteed, so a four-fight extension is basically, we're going to lock you up for four fights. But if you lose, we can release you after one. So I'm glad he got a contract. I hope he got a bit of a raise. I'm not going to count on it, because the holdup in this whole situation was probably that Jim Miller was making a lot of money in the eyes of the UFC. And the holdup in this situation was probably, we want Jim Miller, but we don't want Jim Miller at that rate. So be very interested to see what he's getting paid under this extension. However, it's probably not going to happen, because very few states are releasing the disclosed pay amounts these days, which is frustrating and only serves to hurt the fighters, because release pay helps everyone negotiate, because then everyone knows what everyone else is making, and then you have a starting point. And it's proven to work. It worked in the NHL. As soon as those pays began to get disclosed, the pay rate went up. But with the commissions working with the UFC, that's not likely to happen. And the only thing that's really going to change that is a collective bargaining agreement that forces the hand of the UFC to disclose those pay amounts. And I'm not counting on that happening. Speaking of pay, and this is something I think a lot of people miss, there was a lot of criticism about Israel Adesanya being boring and his UFC 276 win over Jared Cannonier. I say better to be boring and the champion than to be boring and a former champion. And what I base that on is pay. A UFC champion gets paid more than almost any other fighter in the UFC. There's some weird deals out there that see non-champions get a lot of money, but those are few and far between. And so the opportunity for a UFC fighter to get paid is in the belt, and not just getting the belt, but holding the belt, and holding the belt and fighting on pay-per-view cards. So from what we know, Israel Adesanya, his last disclosed pay was $500,000. I'm going to say he's probably in that ballpark, disclosed-wise. And so if he loses that title, based on what we saw happen to Tyron Woodley, Woodley was at $500,000. He lost the title. In his next fight, non-champion, he was making $200,000. And another thing to consider, so now you're already $300,000 down. That's a big chunk of change. Big chunk of change. And you don't go back up all that quickly. You don't go back from 200 to 500 unless you get that title. You may go 200 to 250, which is substantial, but not $300,000 substantial. And so then you also lose out on pay-per-view points. So the last numbers we have here as far as Israel Adesanya is concerned, UFC 263, I think it was, 600,000 buys. And a 2019 Bloody Elbow story from John Nash digging into the financial data that the UFC, that was released in the lawsuit that lawsuits that the UFC has going on against it right now. The pay-per-view points kick in at 200 to 400,000. There is a $1 per buy in that range. And then it's $2 per buy between 400 and 600. And so there's another few hundred thousand dollars. I think the way I figured it out quickly, back of an envelope, was that $600,000 that Israel Adesanya would have gotten for that UFC 263. So had he not been the champion, he's already down almost $1 million in that one fight. And that's why better to be boring and the champion than to be entertaining and not the champion. And so the goal of every fighter is to get, most fighters is to get the title, then to hold on to the title. And the hold on to the title, it's not, maybe a little bit of it is the prestige, but the big picture is the pay. You make a lot more money as champion than as you don't. You make a lot more money if you're the champion than you will if you're not the champion. And so I don't fault Adesanya for fighting quote-unquote safe. Also, safe fighting saves your brain a little bit, I would think. Safe fighting, you don't get hit quite as much. Safe fighting, you don't get knocked out quite as much. And that's the name of the game. Longevity, and longevity as the champion, two of the biggest things a fighter can do to get paid in the UFC. And so the criticism that he didn't entertain the fans, I think that's off base. And I think that's selfish for the fans. And I think if they were in Adesanya's shoes, they would absolutely fight for the money rather than for the entertainment. It doesn't make sense not to. It makes no sense not to fight safe when you're the champion. And also, it's not just up to Adesanya to make that fight entertaining, or any of his fights entertaining. His opponent has to do that as a big part in that. If his opponent is not pursuing him and pushing him and forcing him out of his comfort zone, then of course Israel Adesanya is going to fight in his comfort zone. it makes, because then he'll be able to hold on to the title. So, you know, it takes two to make a fight, and all the blame should not be placed on Israel Adesanya. Absolutely not. Speaking of UFC 276 and non-boring, we have Max Holloway. Now, Max Holloway has been one of the best fighters to watch in the UFC for a pretty long time. And he is an example of high output, all action, deep pool of cardio. He's going to get hit a lot. Yeah, he's going to end up bloody. But more often than not, he's going to end up on the winning side of the equation just because he is nonstop action. Now, that has a downside, and that he's going to get hit a lot. And he has been hit a lot throughout his career. But he didn't get hit a lot in the Alexander Volkanovski fight because Volkanovski's style is more of a shut him down style. Still a pretty action-oriented style, but he shut Holloway down in a big way. Got hit a lot, got damaged. And after the fight, he's now in a situation where he has something to think about. He's three losses to Volkanovski. If he stays at featherweight, he's very likely not going to get another shot at the title for quite a while. He's 30, so I wouldn't count out another shot totally, but it's going to be a while. And it's going to be a while unless Volkanovski gives up that title or someone beats him. And right now, I think it's going to be a while before someone beats him. And so Holloway has a choice to make there. Does he stay at 145 and just keep racking up wins and exciting fights and making probably a fair amount of money in doing so, but also taking a fair amount of damage in the process? And he's also someone the UFC is going to put out there in title fights, so his fights are probably going to be five rounders. And we know a five-round fight for Max Holloway is not a five-round fight for many other people, because a five-round fight for Max Holloway is a lot of activity. So he's got that to think about. I was going to think about, does he move up to lightweight? If he moves up to lightweight, we saw what happened to him against Dustin Poirier. Yes, that was for the title, for the interim title. But I don't think that if Holloway moves up now, I don't think he's in any kind of a different situation. Will he fight for the title right away? No. But will he be thrown into the deep end of the pool right away? Absolutely. Because he is a name fighter. He's making a decent amount of money in the eyes of the UFC. And so they're going to want him to fight big name fights, big name opponents, top of the card fights. And what we saw from Poirier is that his volume, while it carries into lightweight, it doesn't carry as much damage as it does at featherweight. And what's coming back at him is more powerful. And so Max Holloway of today is not made for Max Holloway lightweight of today. He would need to take a step back and build his body up and figure out what is going to be effective for him at 155 pounds, because what's effective at 145 is not going to be effective at 155. If it was, he would have beat Dustin Poirier. Now he's going to need to take some time to do that. If it's the John Jones 2-year plan, okay, he's still only 30, so he's 32, but he needs to figure that out. If he's going to move up, how is he going to move up? I don't think he moves up in a 3 or 6 month period and just says, I'm changing weight classes now. I'm going to fight at 155 and I'm going to fight the same way. I think a few years ago he would have done that, but I don't think he's in that boat right now. I think he's much smarter with the way he handles his career. We saw that in that he doesn't spar anymore, or said he doesn't spar anymore. So I think he's in a much better space as far as how he handles his career. So I think he would take the time to move up correctly. And that means adding muscle to his frame and figuring out how to become a more powerful striker while still maintaining the output that he has at featherweight. Now, the other option for Max Holloway is money fights. And I think this might not be a bad place for him to go. He's got a name. He's going to be fighting in five-round fights. And he really doesn't have anything to prove at this point. He was a longtime champion. He's a fan favorite. He's fun. He's entertaining. He's thoughtful. He's pretty much everything the UFC would ask for in a main event fighter. And he, for the most part, he stays out of trouble. I don't think he's been in any kind of big trouble. And again, that's something that the UFC wants, because then you can, that's someone you know you can count on. You don't have to worry about Max Holloway getting arrested or Max Holloway getting investigated for whatever. And so money fights are an option. And one of the money fights that could happen right away is a rematch with Conor McGregor. I think that fight actually does make sense. I think it would be a big money maker for everyone involved. And it has the backstory. It has two differing personas. And it's a fight the UFC, I think, could make fairly easily if it wanted to and make a lot of money from. But that's another option for Max Holloway. Max Holloway by no means is done because of this loss to Alexander Volkanovski. He's done right now as a potential featherweight champion. But career-wise, everything's wide open for Max Holloway. It's just, what does he want to do? What's next for Max Holloway? And I think he needs to take some time to seriously think that over. And whatever he comes back and whatever he decides, I think it's going to be, fans are going to want to see it. Speaking of fans wanting to see, Sean O'Malley, I'm kind of done with Sean O'Malley and his talk right now. I get it. I get that he uses this to promote himself and that he's pushing himself in a big way and he's popular, but it's just kind of lost on me at this point because he has not proven that he can back that talk up yet. Now, the Munoz fight that just happened, that's kind of not really his fault. The eye poke brought that to an end, but he wasn't lighting Munoz up, contrary to what he's going to tell you or contrary to what he believes happened. Wasn't really lighting him up. In fact, he lost the first round on two of the three cards. I think he lost the first round, and he wasn't having a humongous amount of success in the second round until the eye poke ended the fight. And so what I see for Sean O'Malley is someone who is just yapping. He's getting the attention, but I'm getting a kind of a Michael Page vibe here in that he's not moving up and fighting tough competition. The Munoz fight was his first fight against a ranked opponent. It didn't go his way. So he needs to, at the very least, fight Munoz again, run that back, but I don't think that goes the way in Munoz's favor in a rematch, because I think now they know what he's going to do and so they can prepare for that. But we could also see if he can prepare for that. So I don't think the fight would be a bad fight. I just think that the information he has now, because of the amount of time that he spent in the cage with Munoz, helps him more than it helps Munoz. And I think that anything less than a fight against Munoz or someone ranked above Munoz is just something that doesn't help Sean O'Malley move up, other than in the PR department and then as a fighter who is going to talk a lot. If he wants to be a UFC champion, he needs to fight quality ranked opponents. If he wants to be a moneymaker, then fine. I don't have a problem with that. He can do it, keep on doing what he's doing, but he shouldn't be calling out fighters like Henry Cejudo or top 10 fighters if he's not going to use those fights to launch himself up to the elite level. Sean O'Malley right now needs to, in his next fight, fight Pedro Munoz again or fight someone ranked above Munoz. Anything else is a big step back for Sean O'Malley. And I'm not saying Sean O'Malley can't be a champion. I'm saying I don't know if Sean O'Malley can be a champion. He's a good fighter. Has he shown us that he's a great fighter? And not really. He's beaten people that he's supposed to beat. And he hasn't really been tested. The Vera fight was a test. He failed. And the Munoz fight was shaping up to be a test. And he wasn't getting an A. He was getting a B+. But that fight, it could have went either way by the time it stopped. And if there would have been judging it by the time it stopped, I would say O'Malley probably would have lost that fight. But we don't know, because it got stopped because of the eye poke. But anyway, Sean O'Malley needs to fight a ranked opponent, and he needs to show us more than tell us that he's just how great he is. Otherwise, he's just another guy running his mouth and looking for attention. And The UFC has plenty of those. What it needs is elite fighters. And those are far rarer than folks who just want a spotlight shined on them. So Sean O'Malley has a decision to make. Hopefully, I mean, I would like to see him decide to fight elite competition just to see how great he is. But if he goes the other way, that's fine too. But I don't want to hear about how great you are and how you're the biggest superstar when you're not fighting that level of opponents. So we'll see what O'Malley's future holds for Sean O'Malley. Still very young, still a lot of time, but still a big unknown as to how high he can climb. And that'll be it for today. I'll be back probably next Friday, as long as I have the time, energy, all that good stuff. Thanks for watching, and I'll be back.